From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
All right. Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show, and, you know, we are on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution in the hometown we love. And today, we have no shortage of energy, as you might guess. We have Mr. Tom Alston coming on the show, and Tom is an entrepreneur. Why are you not surprised? He's also an expert in aero, marine, and tax, and avoiding sales tax, which is really important if you're buying a large boat or some aircraft or something like that. But we're also gonna talk to Tom about his entrepreneurial journey. And one of the things that Tom and I have in common is an appreciation for Grant Cardone. And for those of you that do not know who Grant Cardone is, maybe you're new to business or, I don't know. Grant is probably known as the top sales trainer in the world, and he's written several books, and I've read them all, I believe, probably five times each, and he's really an interesting study, so we will talk about that on the show because Grant speaks to me in kind of an interesting way. Now, I will admit, Grant is a little controversial. He is a little harsh. He probably comes across in a way that maybe guys appreciate more than maybe more than women on average, but he's a spectacular author and a success story. So we're going to share a little bit about that. I might share a little bit about that at the end of the show as well, because I've been inspired and I've learned a little bit from Grant Cardone over the years. But this show is about Tom Alston. And so stick around, and I hope you enjoy the show.
Entrepreneurs are the heroes of the American economy. They take the risks, create the opportunities, and move the molecules. Now, back to the Marquee Media Studio, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Well, this is going to be a great podcast. I'm almost going to bet, I'd bet almost anything that I'm going to laugh on today's show. I am joined by Tom Alston. He is the president and CEO of Aero Marine and tax professionals. He's much more than that. This guy is a wealth of knowledge around his business, but he's also a former coach.
So coached high school baseball for four decades.
So I want to dive into your business. And then the tax.
Are you looking for a job?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Always looking for a job. I am.
I wake up every morning looking for a job.
So I want to talk about that. I want to talk about high school baseball. I want to talk about winning in general and where sales sort of fits into winning in entrepreneurship. So those are my three topics. I have no questions written out. There is no script. Normally I'll kind of jot some stuff down, but I am going to just pull the lever.
Do it.
And let it rip, baby.
So, can I swear?
Yeah, absolutely. But we're on, there's seven words you can't say because we are on FM radio on Money 105.5. So
are they George Carlin's words?
Yeah, I don't know, actually. They just said don't swear. So, okay. And it's a conservative audience, so we better not.
Okay.
Obviously, I got Scott over here because we're recording this. Scott can delete any F-bombs or anything like that. So if something slips out. Okay, so just give us a little bit of your background. So 40 years of baseball, you've got this really unique business. 40 years of baseball coaching at the high school level. Maybe just give us an overview of your background and then what led you into this company and this venture.
Well, it was 12 questions I heard in there.
Yes.
I can only remember two of them.
Okay,
I was born in Kaiser Permanente Hospital in Oakland, California on March 12, 1948 at 10:46 a.m. for people who like precision. At the time, my parents lived in Walnut Creek, so I never lived in Oakland or Berkeley or any of that. When I was two, we moved to Fairbanks, Alaska. No, my dad was not in the service. He worked for the state at the time, and then decided he wanted to start his own business. And I don't know why he picked Alaska. I have absolutely no idea. And he started his own company up there and wound up having the largest construction company in Alaska at the time. Wound up building, getting the government contracts and build all the Dew Line radar stations on, you know, to protect us from the evil Russians. And, you know, I remember being in school and I don't know, maybe 6, 7 years old, and they had these drills where they taught us to get under our desks and make sure you cover the back of your neck so you don't get burned. Burnt from what? Mm-hmm. A hydrogen bomb, an atomic bomb? Let me think about what you're telling me. Mm-hmm. You know, that, you know, just the insanity of anything the government says is totally stupid. And then, in case you want to know how I think about things, lived in Fairbanks until I was in the third grade. Moved down to Sacramento, California for a while. Then we went back to Alaska because my dad's business partner stole all the money and left the leavings to my dad. Then we came back to Sacramento. Then he got a job for, I think it was Tikert at the time. Went to Santa Cruz. Lived in a little town called Aptos.
Oh, yeah.
For those of you who are not familiar with California at all, that's right between nowhere and somewhere else. But it's on the coast.
Near the water, yeah.
Yeah. I remember the very first day that I got in the water at Rio Del Mar, which is just a little area, I got stung by a jellyfish.
Oh, wow.
And I can still feel it anytime I think about it.
I heard that's painful. Well, tell me about this journey into entrepreneurship, though. How did that, we'll fast forward a little bit. Give me the journey.
Well, actually, what led up to the entrepreneurship was that I went to 17 different schools before I got out of high school.
Goodness.
Every time my dad's company transferred him, I was raised Catholic, so we'd go into a new city. I'd try to get into the Catholic school and couldn't get in because they were full. So I'd go to a public school just long enough till I could get into the Catholic school. So every time we moved, I was good for two schools. And I learned about making friends quickly because they weren't around long. I learned about being an extrovert, I guess. And, you know, that's really, it really helps to be an extrovert when you're going to be an entrepreneur, because being an entrepreneur is just using a Texas Hold'em term, going all in pretty much every day. I wake up every morning looking for a new job. I would consider myself totally unemployed in the morning. If I don't bring a client in that day, that I was jobless that day. That's the way that I approach it. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, that's true. Give me a little bit of background on the business. So what do you do to help people get into their dream?
Ask questions. Okay. I always approach, every time I'm dealing with someone as a coach, a business coach or a personal life coach or whatever, I hate that word, life coach, I presume, in fact, know that they know the answer to everything. I just keep asking them questions and they work their own problems out. And it's just been a successful path for me. I have 5 clients that I currently do personal coaching with. And, you know, I just, what are you doing? What are you doing today? Oh, okay. What's your biggest problem today? Da, 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 da. Well, why is that? They have to stop and think, and they think about why that is. Why'd you do that? It's just constantly mm-hmm. asking questions. So I don't really have to know anything.
You know, it's interesting because you're asking those questions, and I've heard that, I've heard that kind of process before. Do you think we can just ask ourselves those same questions, right? When we have these things,
yes,
how's it
except
going?
For
and then we just look internal.
But I, in fact, as I was brushing my teeth this morning, I was thinking about that. Well, if I can coach other people to do this, why can't I just ask myself those same questions? And it's because I don't listen to anybody, including myself. I don't. It should be easy. Life should be a lot easier than it is. And I've always made things hard, and I have absolutely no reason, because things have come to me easy. The first girlfriend I ever had, I was in the first grade. I walked on a school bus, and the bus driver says, "Your girlfriend's in the back." I kind of looked at him. Girlfriend? I don't know about a girlfriend. Yeah, Maggie. So I went back there and I says, I hear you're telling people you're my girlfriend. Well, we are boyfriend and girlfriend. Up until that moment, I don't remember ever talking to her.
Wow.
She just appeared. So we were boyfriend and girl's friend for a year or so.
Okay.
But like it's things like that happened to me. And, you know, maybe I was sleeping. I was too young to be smoking dope, so I can't blame it on drugs. I was too young to be drinking, so I remember that moment vividly. Girlfriend's back there? I got a girlfriend. Is that easy to get a girlfriend? Just wake up one day and she appears out of the sky?
So your business is helping people, doing personal coaching, but it's give me the broader scope of the business.
Well, my major business is Aero Marine Tax Professionals. We help people buy airplanes, vessels, and vehicles in California and legally avoid paying the sales tax, which saves them between 8 and 10%. What that means is, because I know that you're a numbers guy, if a guy pays a $5 million for a jet, the state of California wants to charge him $500,000 worth of sales tax. Yeah, that sucks. State doesn't, it has never spent a dime the way that I wanted to. So I've done 2,000 as of this morning, 2,015 of these cases, and not one of my clients has ever paid a dime in tax.
Okay, so they don't pay sales tax. What's sales tax rate on average in California?
Well, it goes between 8 and 10%.
Okay.
It's the lowest one is, I think, the state sales tax rate is 7.25% by law. And then any place that you're at, they charge you the more of that. It's local jurisdictions adding into their
grab for the pie. So let's call it 8% for 8 or 9, just for rough numbers. And so the people that come in and buy, is it usually like a luxury? You're talking about airplanes and boats and luxury type products?
Vehicles, okay. Vessels, or airplanes. I just think I was thinking about the reason why there is an industry there because all three of those things have a third party registration source that's required, which means that the taxing agencies can find out about the transactions, and that's the reason why my company.
And then, so walk me through, if you don't mind. Let's say, hey, I sell my company, and I've got, I want to go buy, $1 million something.
One of the cheap ones.
Yeah, I've never gone out shopping actually, but let's say just for math purposes, maybe dealing with $1 million. I want to go buy $1 million, and that means I got to pay what is that? $800,000 in tax.
No, $80,000.
Oh, $80,000. Oh, yeah.
8%,
yeah, 800 would be,
Yeah, that's
the time. You said it was a math guy. You said it was a numbers guy. I think we proved me wrong. Okay, $80,000. So I'd go to you first before I go buy it?
You better, because if you don't know everything that you need to know before you do it all, you'll do it wrong.
Okay, and then you walk into the person selling it or the company that's selling it, and you can use your format to negotiate out the tax.
Well, I know that it seems that way to you because your experience with sales taxes, you go to a store and they collect it from you.
Okay.
But it's not that way with vehicles, vessels, and aircraft because they become use tax transactions, which means there's the buyer's responsibility and you have to self-file on that stuff.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, you self-file. So if somebody advertises it, some third party advertises a something luxury and I write him a check for $1 million, then I've got to put the use tax on that, the sales tax, if you will. I got to go
not
pay that
myself. Not if you hire
me,
you don't have to put it on.
Yeah. But is that typical? When you buy something high-end like that, you don't pay tax at that time? Like if I go buy a car, do I pay tax at the dealership?
If you buy it at a dealership and take possession in California, not only do you pay tax, you have to because you took possession in California.
That's what I thought.
But when you buy a car from someone else, another individual, excuse me, I'm going to take a little water here.
Yeah.
When you buy a car from someone else, there's no source to collect the tax from you. So the source becomes your DMV registration.
Okay.
And they collect it from it.
Gotcha. Okay. And so what do I do if I come see you first? How do you instruct me? Or can we not give
first
that away because we won't need you?
Well, you can try it on your own.
Okay.
You have about a 40% chance of succeeding.
Okay.
But you have a 100% chance of no taxes if you hire me because I never fail. Okay. And the reason why I never fail is because when I studied all these cases, they're called decision and recommendations, DNRs. I created a list of everything that the state attacked on all of the cases, and I run 100% of my clients through all the failure points.
Gotcha.
And you'd think that that would be simple, but a lot of people actually do pay me money to tell them what to do and then argue with me about not wanting to do it. And I just keep pointing at the fee for that is whatever the sales tax is. And you don't get any money back from me.
Interesting. Okay, so what does your clientele look like? Is it high net worth? I'm describing it as maybe a high net worth person.
We have several personas. You understand.
Like for a marketing
standpoint? Yeah. And there's the higher end client, we give him a name, and it's actually a client's name, so I can't tell you that. he buys 4 or 5 jets a year, flies them all himself, including us. He's in the process of buying his own 737 from Boeing.
Okay. So these are often really successful entrepreneurs, I would assume.
Absolutely.
On average, yeah.
Yeah.
Because those are the people that end up getting wealth to do that kind of stuff.
I can always tell what market is starting to do well because we'll go into periods of time where everybody that calls me is a farmer, or everybody that calls me is a developer, or everybody that calls me owns strip malls. And that's how I can kind of keep my pulse on.
What is it now? What's
nothing.
Oh, okay.
And it's funny. I just did a video 2 days ago about the fact that everybody's saying, well, there's the inventory is down. And I said, well, that has to be a lie. Let's say there's 1 million airplanes on planet Earth. There's manufacturers are probably tossing, let's say, 100 new ones in every year. So unless we're crashing thousands of airplanes, the inventory is not down. Willing people who want to sell their airplanes are down, which means that the aircraft salespeople need to become
entrepreneurial.
Yeah, they got to go out and prospect and convince guys to sell their airplanes or their boats.
Yeah, time to trade up.
There's not a problem with inventory. There can't be, unless I'm completely lost my mind. And there's more airplanes disappearing or boats disappearing, but you'd know about that. It'd be on the news every night.
Yeah, but there's more demand than there is supply right now.
Yeah,
so that's
and there was the demand is going this way. That's the problem.
And so we have inflation is happening then, I assume, right? The prices are going up dramatically.
I'm not allowed to talk about inflation.
To you. Oh, that's right. As we were walking up, you said no political stuff, and that can end up being a hot potato. But inflation is we see it at the pumps.
Too much money.
We see it at the pumps, and we see it in all areas. And yeah, we print an excess amount of money and kept interest rates really low, and here we are. But with that said, there's a demand. There's a supply problem, obviously, in these planes.
Yes.
Supply, there's limited
there
supply.
There is more demand
than there is supply.
Than there is people willing to sell their airplanes.
It's not necessarily a problem, especially if you own an airplane. So, okay, now with that said, what are the other customer personas look like?
There's the reckless persona, where it's the guy that wins the lotto, just decide he has to have a, depending upon how much money he wins, what he wants to spend
or
on
Or gets
it.
Inherited some money.
Yeah, I've had guys that... young guys, and I mean really young guys, in their 20s who sold a company and get $100 million and want to spend 20 of it on a jet.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's guys that made a lot of money just doing crypto, too, there for a bit,
None of them have come.
None of those are coming to... Crypto Ken's not coming to mind as a persona. Okay, what's the other one?
I have a persona that's based around, again, a client of mine, who's a female. She races airplanes, and her backstory is incredible.
Okay, so the pilot, the person that wants to fly the plane themselves.
Yeah, and in fact, all of them in each little segment, each persona, a certain percentage of them fly their own airplanes because this guy that I was telling you about, this our favorite kind of client, he flies his own airplanes, and he buys 4 or 5 a year.
you must meet just the most incredible people in that. I mean, as these clients have got to be so interesting.
Yes, they are.
I have this podcast, and I get to meet interesting people, but that is really fascinating.
Yeah, when I first got in this business, I figured I'm going to be running into movie stars and celebrities. And I've run into thousands of people who do, some of them do things that I'd never heard of before, and I've never heard of them. And as the longer I've stayed in this industry, I've discovered that guys who are extremely wealthy develop this turtle philosophy of flying below the radar.
Oh.
And they don't want anybody to know about them. And, you know, I think that's a mistake. I think if you're successful, you should tell everybody you're successful.
Yeah, I think that's actually why I started the show originally, is because I wanted to share the stories of winning so that we could inspire the up-and-comers. So I've had some of those type of people in Sacramento on the show, but they typically don't want to talk about, you know, what it's like to be wealthy, but they want to talk about the process of how to get there. And to me, that is inspiring. I get intrigued by hearing these different stories about how somebody discovered something because, you know, discovered a secret sauce and took it to victory. So that's really, to me, that seems like it would be a really fun job.
When I was about, I've been in this business now since 2002, so I probably around 2008, 2007, I had a friend who was in the dot-com industry, for lack of any other word. And he called me one day and he says, and I could tell he was down, and I said, "What's up?" He says, "I lost $100 million today. Is there anything I can do?" He says, "No, don't worry about me. I still have another $200."
Yeah. If you're in that's a space I'm in. So we're investors, and we invest into startups, and some of them blow up big and have some real success that are really life-changing, not just for the entrepreneur, but for anybody that's on that early team, right? Yeah. If you're an early employee in a company that blows up, you're going to, you know, you might be shopping for a plane.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. So that, I'm kind of jumping around here. So that business is one, that's your main business. You've obviously got the coaching, but what's this association with Grant Cardone?
I'm a Grant Cardone licensee.
Okay.
Grant Cardone is the number one sales trainer on the planet. A couple of years ago, he created a partnership with a guy named Brandon Dawson, who sold his company for 77 times EBITDA. I don't know whether your listeners know what that means, but...
Earnings?
Earnings before taxes and...
sure, depreciation.
So, insurance, yeah. But, and that's been the best partnership I've ever seen Grant get involved in. I'm a partner with Grant in 9 of his investment funds in terms of... they're all multifamily real estate locations, primarily in Texas and Florida, and one in Georgia. Anyway, everyone who works for me has to attend Cardone University, which is all done online. And I make people do that because it's a tremendous growth in their confidence and just general confidence. Because they understand that there's just communication cycles when you talk to people, that the things that people say to you, like when you go into a store and a lady walks up to you and says, "Can I help you?" You automatically say, "I'm just looking." "Well, of course you're just looking. What'd you come into the store for?" "It's a look, right?" "I'll be right over here, you know, and I'll be willing to help you. But let me, you know, what were you looking for?" You just, it's the extrovert that I learned to be by going to so many schools. That's why I went to, told you about that story. And it's just a matter of having something to say and be willing to push the go button and say what you're thinking. And a sales cycle is just really the willingness to ask the tough questions. When people don't hire me, I ask them why you didn't hire me. And they're shocked. "Nobody's ever asked me that before." I said, "I ask everybody who doesn't hire me. I want to know why, because they might tell me something that I am doing or some representation that I'm making to them that, you know, that I need to change." And so I want to know the answer to everything. And so it leads back to what I was talking about when I coach people. All I really want to do is ask questions. because the guy you're talking to has all the answers you want.
So many salespeople out there don't get that, or they don't get it yet. And they're more concerned with their presentation than they are trying to understand what the client wants or what the person, the other person wants. It's interesting to see that. I catch myself in that mode as well. Although I'm trying to, my New Year's resolution was to fix that, and I'm attempting to do a little bit better job with that.
I'll tell you how to fix it. Real simple. Role play it every morning with someone, and have them give you the reactions that you're used to getting. And if you get used to it, you get flat on having the unwillingness to deal with it, and you just deal with it, and you come up with the answer so that when somebody says something to you like, I'm just looking, you know, or you cold call somebody on the phone, I'm not interested. Well, of course you're not interested. You don't know what I called you about. You know, and unless you listen to what I want to tell you, how could you possibly be interested? And you learn how to do that by practicing. Don't practice on your clients, because every time you mess one of those up, you lose a sale. But you can sit in a right there and have somebody in your office and give them your most often objections, as they're called. Mm-hmm. Just so you get used to dealing with it, and then script them all out.
And in terms of that, so when they give you those objections, do you ever counter that objection with another question?
First thing you always do is agree. Got it. I understand. I completely understand. I agree.
That's right out of the Grant Cardone playbook.
Yeah, it is. The first, always, there's three always, agree. And then say what you're going to say. In most cases, what people say to you, that's not even a real communication. It's just what he calls an RDR, reactionary defense response. Just acknowledge it. Don't swat it away. Don't even try to deal with it. Acknowledge it and go on to where you were. And if it's a problem, you're going to see that, if that's a real objection, because it's going to keep coming up. And then there's scripts of how you dig down deep on somebody who's digging into not answering your questions. The other thing that most salespeople do is that they ask questions and they don't bother to get answers. They just take whatever somebody tells you. You know, it's like, what do you think of the red? I think it's going to rain tomorrow. They consider that an answer. It's not an answer to your question. Dig deep until you get an answer. And keep asking the question. Keep impinging on people until they answer your question, because you can't help them.
I think most people want to answer the question. And sometimes they don't. You think that people don't answer the question straightforwardly, you know, maybe for I don't know, privacy concerns, or, you know, they want to be appropriate in the answer.
Well, it's their responsibility to tell you that.
Yeah.
And you got to keep asking them.
Interesting. Yeah. So I've read, I think, every one of Grant Cardone's book, or listened to it on audio 5 times at least. Mm-hmm. So I've drank the Kool-Aid, if you will. I've immersed myself in the Kool-Aid. I haven't read one in a year or two, so I
got a new one out on Audible. In fact, it's
he does.
It's called 10X, the 10X Mentor.
10X Mentor. Okay, so he's got the 10X rule. He's got be obsessed or be average, sell or be sold. I'm trying to think of the others. Those are the ones that come into my mind. Which is your favorite? Do you have a favorite?
My favorite is anytime I can hear Grant's voice. It's fine. I'd listen to him all day, every day. I've gone through his university probably 3 or 4 or 5 times. I've got read every one of his, listened to every one of his books 11 or 12 times. What attracted me to Grant was the very first time I heard him speak, I heard him doing, I think it was the 10X rule was the very first one I heard. And a minute, because he just communicates to me on an aesthetic sound wave level. Mm-hmm. It just clicks.
Yeah. I felt that same way. I think the first one I read was the 10X rule. My son referred me to it. And what I like about his approach is he prompts me to think a little bit bigger, And so I like that because I, by nature, try to think big. And I catch myself, you know, maybe thinking small occasionally. And but to think big and anything is possible is really who I want to be deep down and who I think I really am deep down. He taps into that in a pretty cool way.
Well, he makes a part of his process, those of us who are Cardone devotees, to write your goal down every morning, right when you first get up, and every night, right before you go to sleep, and just do that. And then I heard him say, I was with him at a conference in his office a couple of years ago, and he says, lie to yourself until you find out that you cheated yourself.
That's what goals are like.
That's what he said. I never heard it said that way. So what he says is lie to yourself. I'm gonna make $100 million. I've got $100 million.
Lie to yourself. Until you get there, advance, basically.
And your goal should have been bigger.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, so the title that I one of the book that I like the most is Be Obsessed or Be Average. And I think that book sort of that's how I am. I obsess on things, and so I really relate to that be obsessed, and it's actually okay to do that. It's like not wrong because when you really and working here in the startup community, you can't do a startup. You can't be a startup founder and not be pretty obsessed with what you're doing. You ain't gonna make it because it's too hard.
Yep.
And so I really resonate with that, and that's why I'm drawn to what I do. I think is I like being around really ambitious, driven people.
That's what I liked about getting in this industry. And especially in when the .com, before the .com bubble broke the first time, is that I was talking to people who had actually made the money. I wasn't talking, if I'd have been talking to guys that were 30 years old with $1 billion and it was in the 1950s or the 1960s or the 1970s, it would have been family money. Mm. These were guys that had done it. Started in a garage, like the guy that built the first router. You know, it's amazing. And then one of my clients, she sold her company, and her take from the company was $4.3 billion.
Billion with a B.
Wow. And what did she do with it? The very next day, she started another company. And I asked her, I says, what are you going to do different this time? She says, I'm not going to use a dime of my own money.
Oh, yeah. She understands the power of the venture capital dollar.
Yeah.
and it's true. The venture capital as an asset class has blown up. And it's really creating a lot of new opportunity for people that are really smart and creative and innovative. And so I love it. I think it's a blessing for society because they're changing the world and such incredible ways. So I relate to be obsessed or be average. But the other one, as we were talking earlier, you talked about role playing, and one of his books, Sell or Be Sold. I think that's an interesting. You know, he's got great titles for his books because if you're not, his kind of the idea for the audience is if you're not creating, you know, everybody's a salesperson at some level. Even
everybody's
if you're not
a salesperson in
sales.
And every communication. Yeah.
So you're either being convinced to do something or you're convincing somebody else to do something or you're persuading them in some way. And so you're on one end of that opportunity. And so, but people don't think like that. They think it's almost, there's a lot of people that think it's just not built that way. They're insecure about that.
Well, that's because most of the information that most of us have grown up with is wrong, dead wrong, absolutely wrong. Like, don't talk to strangers. Strangers has everything in the world that you want. They have the money, they have the knowledge, they have the power, the influence. If you don't talk to them, how are you ever going to get it? And if you follow Grant on social media, you watch him bringing up his two girls, they're not afraid to talk to people. They're not. And I know well enough that at least I can say hi, Scarlett. Yeah. You know,
both. I got. I'm blessed that way too. And I guess it was their upbringing. So, what I would consider about my normal personality is reserved. If I go to a party, I don't want to be. I'm not probably like you. I was more outgoing.
No, I'm shy as hell.
You are?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's my general persona. Maybe I got told don't talk to strangers
Grant
too many times.
Grant is very shy, too.
Interesting.
The very first time I met him, I went and talked to him in his office, and it was like, where's Grant? Right. What'd you do with him?
But if you want to be effective in a role like either one of us have, or maybe in any role virtually, you've got to be able to come out of your shell a little bit and navigate the waters. So it's kind of interesting that people, some people just never come out of that.
Right.
But my natural response is I'm kind of like, go ahead and be by myself and obsess. I don't have to obsess with other people. I can obsess at home and then get out there and hopefully flip the switch and, do what I do. So that's interesting. I wouldn't have picked you as a shy person. That's interesting.
That's my assessment of myself.
Yeah. Okay. Nobody else has ever told you that.
Nobody else who doesn't know me. Mm. My wife knows I'm shy.
Yeah.
She'll get out of it. Go over there and talk to that. Go. And she.
My wife knows I'm shy too.
Yeah. How? You can't hide things like that from your wife. Yeah. Why? You walk into a room, there's 100 people in there, and you've been there for half an hour. She says, how come you haven't met 15 people yet? Yeah.
What would Grant do?
He's shyer
too.
He's very shy. But
They would line up to
this. He's a magnet, though. People all want to talk to him.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Okay. So I know this is one of those podcasts that's kind of like bouncing around. I want to talk about high school sports, high school baseball, I guess specifically is where you're more than a journeyman. You've embedded yourself into that world. I'm very, I guess, appreciative of what sports does for young people, mm-hmm. what it can do, especially with a good coach, but even a bad coach can teach us a lot. But the beauty of high school sports, I think some people just don't quite get that. Why do you love high school sports?
Well, I don't anymore.
And what happened? You lost the love?
I lost the love for high school baseball.
Why? You had a problem. Well, you liked it for 39 years, so...
Well, I liked it for probably 35 of the 40.
You think it's changed?
Absolutely. I mean, I was in it long enough it was completely different.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've seen high school baseball, or I've seen baseball...
But it's the same problem. If you had to pick a word for the problem in society today, it's the same thing with wrong sports. The school district that I was in, they're more worried about not having a problem than they are about creating real solutions. The amount of time that a high school coach spends in the office with the either the principal or the athletic director because some parent is complaining because instead of hitting their kid fifth, he should be hitting first. It's like, I created a contract when I first went to the first time that I became a head coach. I created a contract. In fact, the kids from that school created the contract. I says, let's make a list of everything that you as a kid has 100% control over. You have 100% control over showing up at school. You have 100% control over your grades. You have 100% control over your attitude. Those kinds of things. And we wrote it into a contract. And I made the vice principal sign it. I made the kid sign it, and I made the kid's parents sign it. And one of my favorite days in coaching was that a parent was upset with something that one of my assistant coaches did because he used a bad word, I think it was. No, I won't tell you which word it was. But it rhymed with duck. He wanted me to do something about it. And I says, I am going to do something about it. So tell me what you heard. And I'm talking to the parent in front of the athletic director. And he told the story. And then the athletic director, and he says, what's your side? I said, no, there's no side. He's got exactly right. He says, well, he kind of got the look. He says, but here's the deal. And I pulled out the contract. I said, that both of you guys signed. You both signed it. It said, I'm the coach. I get to decide what the lineup is. I get to decide who the coaches are. And I'm going to cut your kid tomorrow. Because that's what it says I'm going to do. And if I told you in writing I'm going to do something, and you guys did it, you're gone. And they couldn't say anything. I mean, the guy wanted to say things, but it's a matter of people in this country have been taught that there's no consequences to your choices, including the choices that you make in writing. The one-sided contracts that Major League Baseball players have that owners, you know, can't have any control of, and that's their own fault because they gave it up. It's just like, real life doesn't work that way. Go live in the jungle and see if any of your...
Go be a startup.
Yeah. You're going to fail. You're absolutely going to fail if you don't understand that you cause everything. I know I take responsibility for everything that happens in my life. Everything that works well, I want to walk around and strut a little bit. But when things don't work, it's my fault.
You know, that's interesting because so what you're saying about society changing and evolving, I'm not going to disagree with that, but I played in the 70s and early 80s. I coached in the, you know, I guess it was 20 years ago or something like that, high school level baseball teams and youth football up to like eighth grade. And I ran it, I guess, old school and things you can't do now, but I'm now, I'm kind of questioning. So what I learned and what I feel like I brought was some of the lessons I learned as a child. And I was not restricted, too much, by parents or society or anything. So to hear that it's now changed and you're disenfranchised with even the concept, because I'm seeing my grandkids out there playing youth sports and so on. And of course there's helicopter parents and so on, but I feel like they're still getting something important out of the athletic endeavor.
That's because
it's not torn down to zero. It's still better than playing video games at your home.
It probably is better than watching porn or watching, you know, sitting on and playing games.
Yeah.
Yes, it's better, but if the standard was here, the standards are now here. And that's what I have a problem with.
Yeah. And I look at it, I've said this, my Ronald Reagan quote that I got on the wall, every great change in America begins at the dinner table. And I think one of the challenges that's happening is the value system of parents has evolved into this blame, and we're teaching that at some level. But I do think the parents that get it, right, there are listeners out there that don't think that they should go talk to the coach when their kid's not getting enough playing time. They understand that it's the child's responsibility to own it, right, and be a leader. There are people that do that, but that philosophy, those values need to get taught in the house. It's not getting taught in school. It's got to get taught by the parents.
Yep. It's their fault, right?
Yeah. Well, own it.
Yeah, well, it just doesn't work that way. And it's like it's the old chicken or the egg thing. Is the problem with the parents or with the schools? It's with both.
Interesting. I just must have this, like, I don't know what the view is where you're just, like, blind to so many things. Because when I see my two children, the way they parent, they're right on, they're spot on, you know, the way I would, let's call it old school, the way I mm-hmm. would be thinking. So I didn't realize how much of a minority they might be.
Well, they are, and they'll be ostracized. How old are they now?
My kids are 34 and 36, and the grandkids range from 11 down to 7.
Okay. The thing that is, in my opinion, is changing them is what's taught in the schools. And that started with...
You're not going political. This is hard for you to not go political.
Yes. It started with the corruption at the school board.
Okay.
Which are entirely run by the school unions, which it is my opinion that most unions are fairly corrupt. In fact, I'll make it a point to you. You remember when they... were voting on the creating the lotto, that one of the things that they said that X amount of that money goes to the schools.
Right.
But you couldn't spend it on teachers. You remember that?
I didn't remember that you can't spend it on teachers.
Yeah, you okay. couldn't you couldn't pay the teachers with it. Because the teacher says, okay, whatever the amount of money that comes to our school district, the school district has to look into its own resources and pay as bonuses to the teachers 100% of that.
We'll have Scott delete that for money 105.5. Okay, so this is great. You and I could go on all day just for the, you know, for the,
I'm in no hurry,
for the length of our podcast for listeners. Maybe I'll just ask you a final question or two. Like, what question did I not ask you that you would be like, hey, I wish you would have bounced past that one to me?
I'll think of that while I'm driving home.
All right. Maybe just some closing thoughts then about winning. So you've obviously had a ton of success. You're helping others who have achieved success. Your team is adopting Grant Cardone mentality, which is inspiring for me as a Grant Cardone. I don't know if I'd call myself an aficionado, but somebody that really appreciates Grant. But maybe just some closing words of wisdom, because our audience is a lot of entrepreneurs, maybe startup entrepreneurs. Any thoughts about winning and how to approach?
If anyone comes to me and wants to know something, don't ever expect me to tell you not to do something. Do it. Go all in. Whatever you think is a good idea as a business, do it. The worst thing that can happen to you, the absolute worst thing, is you find out something that didn't work. You don't fail. The only way you can fail is to quit. That's the only way you can fail. That's why I'm a failed baseball coach, because after almost 40 years, I quit.
The only way you can fail is to quit. I have said that many times. It's not politically correct, because people are all embracing failure these days, and it's all the way you frame it. But I love that. The only way you can fail is to quit. You heard it here on the Mark Haney Show. Tom Alston, thank you so much for joining me. I definitely laughed a little bit. We're going to have to bleep something out.
Oh, no.
But, you know, it's this is what, I guess this is what showbiz is all about.
Absolutely.
Now, let's get Mark's perspective and closing thoughts from today's show. We're back to the Marquee Media Studio. It's the Mark Haney Show.
Welcome back to the Mark Haney Show. Yeah, today's show was interesting, and to me, because Tom and I have got a lot in common, and as I mentioned at the top of the show, one of the things that Tom and I have in common is our appreciation for Grant Cardone. And Grant has written a number of books. Sell or Be Sold is one of the books. Be Obsessed or Be Average. The 10X Rule. I think the 10X Rule might be his most popular. And it's about doing things, you know, do it. Once you find something that's working, do 10 times more. And you'll accomplish so much more in your life. But many of the books are about having the right mindset to win. And Be Obsessed or Be Average spoke to me in the title, because my wife will tell you that I can really have these obsessions. So I like to say that I immerse myself in what I love, and then I tell my wife I'm going to work, because I am obsessed with, it might be working out, it might be with the businesses that I love. But when I lock into something, could be this podcast, I lock on harder than most, and I end up cutting everything else out of my life, or I attempt to cut as many other things out of my life and just focus on what I consider the basics. I obsess on the basics because I love it. It's what I love. And a lot of people, they want to go on vacation. They want to travel. They want to make all these discoveries. And I'm like, I can discover so much more within myself, within my friends, within my family, within my community. There's so much to discover because I love that. And so I obsess more close to home than probably the average person. And so Be Obsessed or Be Average really speaks to me that it's almost like it's okay to be a little bit obsessive. And I think if you're launching a business, you probably need to obsess. There you have these windows of opportunity to get your business off the ground or to really scale it if something's working. You don't want to miss that window. And if you're out paying attention to other things, instead of obsessing on how to move the needle, likely going to be a little bit less effective. And the other book that I think is, the title speaks for itself, sell or be sold. And I think salespeople generally, I think they maybe get a bad rap because there's been the sort of the stereotype of somebody in sales is pushy and that kind of thing. But just the word sell or be sold, maybe if I change the word to influence or be influenced, right? So usually you're on the end of influencing something to happen the way you'd like to see it go, or somebody is influencing you. Both are okay, but if you don't think that in order to be successful, you need to do some influencing, then you are sadly mistaken, because all of us are salespeople at some level. All of us need to be able to influence if we want to get what we want in life, whether you're an employee wanting to get the approval of your teammates or your boss. It's all about influence. Now, somebody might call it sales. Another person might call it influence. Somebody else might call it leadership. But it's about getting people to come along with you. And it doesn't happen by accident. So these books and Grant speak to me. And so that, I think if you read one of his books or listen to one of his audiobooks, which is what I like to do, you'll kind of get a little sense more of me and the type of person that I can relate to. Even though Grant and I are quite different, he speaks my language in many, many ways. So to all you out there fighting the good fight for our security, for our freedom and our way of life, and to all you out there fight the good fight for entrepreneurship, you got to be able to make a sale, my friends. Just to everybody out there that is chasing the American dream, you know, at Haney Biz and at the Growth Factory and on the Mark Haney Show, we're never below you. We're never above you. We're never below you. We're always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.